Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. Our guest in this episode is a good one. Lindsay Schanzer is NBC Sports' senior producer of horse racing, and she will be talking to us from Louisville, where the 150th running, amazing 150th running of the Kentucky Derby will air this Saturday, May 4th at 2:30 p.m. on NBC and Peacock. They'll air 9 races. Lindsay also is the producer of NBC Sports' College Football Studio show, as well as co-producing gymnastics at the Olympics. I'm always fascinated by horse racing and just how it's produced. It's such a beautiful sport to watch on television, and Lindsay has, you know, I would say the best assignment in the world. She gets to produce the Kentucky Derby. So Lindsay Schanzer coming up from Louisville on the Sports Media Podcast. So the 150th Kentucky Derby airs this Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern on NBC and Peacock. It's live coverage featuring 9 races. NBC Sports will do 15 total races across the Kentucky Derby and Kentucky Oaks Day over Friday and Saturday. And Lindsay Schanzer is at the head of all this as NBC Sports' senior producer of horse racing. She also is a producer for NBC's college football coverage. And at the Olympics, she will be producing gymnastics. And you don't get the gymnastics job unless they trust you, because that is a very, very important sport when it comes to the Olympics. And with that, I bring in Lindsay Schanzer live from Louisville. Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You got it. All right. So here's where I want to start. I'm sure you have been asked this question in some form before, or you've certainly thought about it a lot. But to me, like as someone who's written about this, one of the most interesting things about the Kentucky Derby as a production is that you have to navigate appealing to, you know, the hardcore horse racing fan who's going to watch these races and probably watches a ton of horse racing. But the far bigger audience, Lizzie, as you know, are casual fans who will watch one race per year in horse racing, and that's the race that you're producing. So how do you navigate a broadcast that's got to cater to two very, very different groups of an audience?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question and a great point. It's tough, but, you know, we've been doing this for years and we like to think we've found a sweet spot. But yeah, it's the challenge of educating while not alienating, because as you say, there are people who are watching the coverage who do know what they're talking about. They understand all the terminology. They know the horses. They read the racing form. And you don't want to turn them off, but the large majority of the people watching probably only watched one horse race a year, maybe a few more if they're watching the other Triple Crown races, maybe the Breeders' Cup. But at the end of the day, you're really working with a sort of novice audience. Anyway, so we do our best to, I would say, more of the majority of our coverage is catering to that latter audience that I mentioned. We also are treating an audience who is not just tuning in to watch racing and learning about the horses and horse racing itself. They want to see the pageantry of the Kentucky Derby and this day. So, you know, we're giving them the fashion, we're giving them the traditions, the history of the event. But we try to make sure that we educate you on the horses in the field, particularly the Derby over, you know, the 5-hour NBC broadcast that we have, but also the undercard races that are really spectacular races on Derby Day at Churchill Downs. So it's a challenge, but we try to strike that balance. And like I said, educate, not alienate. That's our motto.
One of the things that NBC has put out for years in terms of a statistic for this particular broadcast is that the event draws 50% or more of a female audience, yep. which, still in sports broadcasting is pretty rare. Because of that gender breakdown, is there anything that you do differently on this broadcast, or is that just a byproduct that, hey, this happens to be an audience that's, 50-50, the Olympics is very, very similar, and you do the broadcast that you do?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you mentioned it, the Olympics is sort of the other sporting event on our network that has a similar breakdown as in terms of the demographic. So I don't know that we treat it drastically differently. Part of it is kind of the nature of the event that maybe feels like it's catering more toward the female audience, but it's just sort of what the event has to offer. I mentioned the fashions, the tradition. We cover a lot of that. But the other element of it is just part of what racing offers, which is, I mentioned we do a 5-hour broadcast and we'll cover 5 live races on NBC over 5 hours. That means there's a lot of time in between. And a lot of what we do is storytelling. We do a lot of features. We do a lot of, giving you a reason to root for the connections of each of these horses. You don't get to do quite as much of that on, Sunday Night Football, our Big Ten football broadcasts, our NASCAR coverage. That's not to say there's not storytelling, but there's not time necessarily to really stop down and give you the backstory of these connections. And I think some of that storytelling, I think, is really what resonates with the female audience.
So I want to ask you about sort of some of the broader challenges, but you brought up something about the features for the Derby and focusing on connection. So, I should know this off the top of my head, but they don't. Is it 17 or 18 horses in this race? I don't think they got 20. To 20, right?
20, last, okay. No, it's last year we ended up with 18, but we're, fingers crossed for the full 20 this year.
Okay, so full 20. Maybe like people who are just starting to pay attention to this, like have heard of Fierceness. That's the morning line favorite. Won the Juvenile last year, won the Florida Derby this year. I think Sierra Leone is the second favorite at the moment. But the reality is the reality is no one, unless you're the hardcores, are going to know all 20 horses at this point and where they might sit in terms of the morning line odds. So when you're thinking about like sort of feature presentation, Lindsay, like do you want something ready for all 20 horses, or because of resources, do you gamble like, all right, we got something on 15 and we're hoping these other 5 don't do anything, but then I get it. Like then you get like an 80-1 that comes in, right? You don't want to be left sort of in the cold. So what's your process there in terms of having something like feature oriented on every entry?
Yeah, I mean, it depends what you mean by features. So we definitely look at the broadcast and say, hey, we've got time here. We need to make sure we hit something on every horse, whether it's a report, whether it makes it its way into a viz, whether Steve Kornacki has an element that maybe is touching on the long shots, or maybe he's talking about the background of the Japanese horses and the second choice Japanese horses really not getting much love, but we'll work him into that storytelling. There are elements throughout the show where we hit every horse. But those real sort of deeper dive feature storytells, it's a little bit of a balance. We don't force necessarily a feature story on the favorite or favorites, but we definitely try to lean in that direction if we can find a good angle, because we know we're going to be talking about that horse and we really like to take that deeper dive if we can. But at the end of the day, best story wins. So this year, the stories I'm most excited about telling are probably the one I'm most excited about is that could be the biggest long shot on the board is a horse called West Saratoga. Trainer is Larry Demerit, as a black trainer from the Bahamas, who has never been in the Derby before. He has a very small stable, not particularly expensive horses, currently suffering from multiple myeloma. He's been going through chemo for years, and just a real, feel-good story. You're going to want to root for this guy. He and his owner have been together forever, and they were the horse has the silks. Jockey will wear the silks from the state of Colorado, where the horse owner is from, and it's a great story. And even if that if that horse is going to be a super long shot on the board, we're definitely going to tell that. Another one is trainer Dwayne Lucas, who you may have heard of. He was around and, kicking butt for a very long time and has been out of the Derby game for a little bit, but he's got his 50th starter this year at the age of 88. He would smash the record for oldest trainer to win if he did. And he's teaming up with Keith Asmussen, who's 63 years his junior and happens to be the son of another trainer in the race, Steve Asmussen. So Keith will ride the horse, D-Wayne will train it, and their horse Just Steal is sort of mid-pack. So not favorites, but great stories, and we want to make sure we hit those.
Yeah, West Saratoga 30-1 morning line odds. So
at least, yeah.
At least, yeah. Yeah. That's when the as the race gets closer, that that will not be 30-1. I agree.
That's
with right. You. All right, so I in my deep research here, Lindsay, I saw you do a I don't know if it was a podcast or some kind of video with Joe Theismann. This was very Notre Dame related.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And so one of the things that you guys talked about, like, I think you held up like a sheet, basically, like a either like a planning sheet or a shot sheet, whatever it was, and you said, like, here's 35 pages of how the Kentucky Derby is going to go, and that's only the first 4 hours. So yeah. I was like, wow, yeah. This is like a serious undertaking in terms of all the different elements that come. So what I was curious about is, because it's such a long show, like, is there any way that you can do a rehearsal prior to the show, or you just have these planned elements and you try your best to sort of that everything fits, but of course news might overtake that? Like, so how, when it's so long like this, like, how does it work in terms of like rehearsals and people knowing when they're coming on, et cetera?
Yeah. I mean, great point. We can't rehearse it. It's just too long. And not only is it too long, but we're actually on the air on other networks, you know, prior to NBC, when maybe our announced team could be able to rehearse. We've got a 2.5 hour show on USA. Premier League is live, you know, most of the morning from Churchill Downs as it is. So we just, to your point, we don't have the resources to rehearse. But what we do is, you know, we spend a lot of time in meeting rooms, you know, really starting Wednesday. You know, the whole announce team will get together. We'll spend 2 or 3 hours going through every single format line by line, so everybody knows what they're doing. Our Thursday production meeting, we'll go through the formats. All our reporters will rehearse their hits in the meeting room so everyone can hear what they're saying, what they're coming off of, making sure the transitions work. And then there are some elements that we'll rehearse sort of Thursday night. Maybe some of Friday evening, but for the most part, we really don't get a chance to do it. We trust each other. We talk through the plans. You know, there are sort of subgroups that talk to each other, and not to everybody, but, we just have sort of figured out the system to make sure we can trust that it's going to play out the way we want it to. And then, to your point again, inevitably we put everything on paper, and, you know, as soon as there's an inquiry on the track that takes, you know, 5 or 6 minutes to adjudicate, format goes out the window. You got to make changes and adjust on the fly. And that's where everyone just, you know, ears up and listens and figures out what to do next. But it's a really, really great group that we have. We've been working together for a long time. Everybody trusts each other. And, you know, we've gotten to a pretty good place of being able to react and adjust on the fly.
But I wanted to ask you, because it's sort of an obvious question. I've had a lot of producers on this podcast before. And, you know, something that's always interesting to me is sort of, you know, like what the biggest challenges are. You can only plan for so much, but in many ways you sort of have to just to react. And my thought with your broadcast, just given the length, would just be the biggest challenge would be to reacting to like live news, something, you know, never root for this, but obviously, you know, something goes bad with one of the horses, or maybe like the favorite or something like that is scratch or something like that. But maybe it's something else. Maybe it's rain or maybe it's something different. So for you, what's, having now done this, having been the producer of the Derby now for a little bit, what do you consider the biggest challenge for the production?
I think that's it. You know, it is reacting in real time, and it's maybe a little bit more detailed than that. Like, it's not to say reacting to anything is ever easy. It's certainly not, but you know, some of the tougher situations that have occurred, we go in with a plan. We know how we want to approach it. If there is, you know, say a fatality or an injury on the track, of course, we hope that never happens, but we know the people we're going to talk to. We know the reporting we want to try to do. We know the information we want to get. We know that we're never giving information that is not, you know, vetted and that we're ready to really provide with, you know, full truth. But it's so knowing that we have that plan in place, again, it's never easy. But from my perspective, it's more, we have a lot of mouths to feed in this show. And I mean, not just, you know, there are sponsor elements that are, there are certain agenda pieces, but for the most part, it's the audience. It's all of this storytelling we plan to do. It's what you said. It's the fact that we go in wanting to be able to tell stories about all 20 horses. And then when certain incidents happen, they take away from the structure that we have on paper. And We like to keep the pace moving, which means that the format is pretty tight. There's a lot of detail in there. So once something goes off the rails, it really kind of affects, it's a domino effect for everything thereafter. So it's making split second decisions. What are we going to lose? What are we going to move? What do we have to sacrifice to get back on track?
Is there, you know, one of the things when I've watched the coverage is over the last couple of years is I love the shot. I think it's a drone, but it's sort of it's the shot from above the track where you can really, you could really see when a horse makes a move and like why sort of a race finished as it did. Is there, and I imagine that camera has a name of which I do not honestly know, but for you, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I laugh because I think that became most famous after Rich Strike won 2 years yes. ago, the major long shot sort of came up the rail in and out of horses. And everybody really thought that was a drone, but it's not. It was actually an airplane. We have a fixed wing airplane that covers the racing from above that we've had for years and years. But that was sort of the quintessential perfect use for it. But honestly, since then, and because of how popular that shot was last year, you know, we all really came into it feeling like we want to use that shot more often, even if it's not as drastic of a move. It's the perspective that lets you understand how the race really played out. So yeah, that's the plane camera. We also have a drone, but that's a slightly different perspective that'll be a little bit more inside of the horses.
Can you call the plane camera the Rich Strike camera? I feel like
we
almost
should.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that would be natural. All right. So the reason I asked this is I wanted to know if you as the lead producer, if you had a favorite camera or you had a favorite view when it comes to shooting horse racing.
I think definitely the plane from, you know, for the reasons we just talked about. I do sometimes we will use the drone in a different way, particularly when we don't have a plane, and it'll kind of give you the overhead a little bit closer to the horses behind. I like that view, but I will say I think the number one view, it's more from a TV perspective in horse racing, is the back cam. So we've got 2-point cable system on the back stretch, you know, that takes you all the way down from when they come out of turn one into turn two. And it just gives you the perspective of the whole field right alongside them with, you know, the backside in the picture. It's actually best on turf racing because of where the back camera itself sits, which is between the turf track and the dirt track. So when you watch the Turf Classic, which is the race before the Kentucky Derby, it gives you that exact same perspective of the horses, but you have the entire grandstand with the Twin Spires behind it. It is just spectacular. It's a beautiful race look, but it's also just a gorgeous look at the track itself. So that's my favorite.
Nice. All right. A couple more on horse racing, and then we'll get to gymnastics. You were part of NBC. You've been part of NBC's horse racing team for 12 years, I think, if my math is right on your bio here. And you were part of the coverage when American Pharoah won the Triple Crown in 2015, Justify won in 2018. Fox now has the Belmont. Mm-hmm. So I wonder from your perspective, when you're doing the Preakness, I think as someone who loves horse racing, you're going to root for, I think in some ways, a Triple Crown to have a shot every year. But is it weird now? Like, you know, like one of the things that like is kind of, you know, if you were an NBC sports person, you know, you knew like if you were heading to the Belmont with like the Triple Crown on the line, one, you knew you were going to get a gigantic audience, but two, it's just cool. You know what I mean? Like you have a chance to see history. Now it's like you have this weird handoff to Fox. How do you see that now?
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's a bummer. We loved covering the Triple Crown and I hope in the future we'll get it back, but you know, there's no drop off in terms of planning or enthusiasm for a Derby winner. Should he go, he or she, not this year, she, but
yeah, we get a
Philly. I know it'd be nice. Should they go to the Preakness? Of course, we're rooting for that horse to win. Everybody's rooting for that horse to win for the most part when they go to the Preakness and give a shot at the Triple Crown. So yes, it's a bummer to not be able to see it through and have the opportunity to cover it. But from a personal perspective, maybe I'll get to go experience it in person for once. So
yeah, there you go. You can be, I'm sure Fox, if you needed to, will hook you up with a nicer
seat. Saratoga this year. So,
oh yeah.
It'd be interesting.
Better.
Yep.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah. That is a great track for anybody who's never been there.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, you are producing gymnastics for the Olympics, right? You have everything in gymnastics, every part of that, men's, women's, etc., artistic.
So we do for the primetime coverage, yes. But I should say I'm co-producing with my colleague and great friend Billy Matthews, who's done it for years. We're ponchoing it together.
So here, I mean, this has come up, as you know, a million times. NBC has sort of made its bones going back to the, you know, Ebersol days. I mean, in some ways, maybe this goes back to Maroon Arledge at ABC too. But gymnastics in particular really is narrative storytelling when it comes to the primetime coverage of this. It's very much, how do I sort of say this, like, polite? It's sort of very dramatically done in terms of sort of finding the narrative arc of a story to tell the story of gymnastics. That's very different, I would argue, from what you're doing this week when it comes to the Kentucky Derby. That's very cool for a producer to be part of both, but I wonder if you could just sort of talk in broad strokes about what's interesting to you about doing gymnastics, and do you have to think, like, in terms of almost the way, like, a director of a feature film might think about when it comes to gymnastics?
Yeah, I mean, listen, gymnastics is an amazing sport and has always been one of, if not my favorite Olympic sports to consume. The coolest thing about gymnastics is it's just inherent drama. It's what you describe. I mean, sure, you know, horse racing is great and there's drama in the 2 minutes of the race, but it's over in a flash. There's so much anticipation and buildup and heartbreak in the middle of the competition and then redemption because it takes place over these, you know, in an all-around or team competition, these four events, and it just sort of builds throughout. And, you know, as you said, you just get to storytell and help amplify that, you know, sense of anticipation and crescendo, building to, you know, whatever the final outcome is at the end of the day. So it's very different from this sort of fast paced race starts and the winner takes it all versus the more sort of intricate play out of a gymnastics competition. I love watching it and I'm psyched to be a part of it.
Gymnastics in particular at these Olympics, really, I mean, gymnastics is always going to be popular, obviously, but, you know, millions of people are going to watch it.
Yep.
But this one in particular really kind of can be awesome. If Gabby Douglas makes the team, I assume Simone Biles will make the team. Suni Lee, I think, is back too. So you're walking into like a situation where you have like generational stars on one team. I don't know what the thing would be, but it'd be like, if Kobe, Michael Jordan and LeBron, like we're all on like one team at like, you know what I'm saying? Like one, maybe they were actually on one Olympic team. I should go. No, actually Jordan wasn't, would retire. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like that, like the women's gymnastics in particular, like has a chance to maybe arguably be like the most viewed sport of these Olympic Games because of who theoretically should be back if they make it.
Yeah. By the way, I lost you there for a second, so I don't know who you specifically called out, but it's very possible. I think it probably will be the most watched bit of the coverage anyway, just as you said, because of the storytelling and because of the popularity of women's gymnastics as it is. But absolutely. I mean, given what happened in Tokyo and how we saw Simone Biles go out and just, you know, not compete in the way we expected her to, she's decided to come back. We didn't know if she would, and she looks rock solid. So to see her kind of come back to the Olympics, see how she performs and hopefully see her perform to the best of her abilities is just going to be the number one storyline of the Olympics, I think. And then, as you mentioned, there are a few names that are out there that, you know, you recognize from the last Olympics that may make that team. Suni Lee is trying to come back. Jordan Childs, Jade Carey, Gabby Douglas made her return to competition this past weekend. And, you know, she already qualified for two events for US Championships. So you know, it's not to say that they'll all make the team necessarily. I think some are more likely than others, but it absolutely makes for some great storytelling going into it. And frankly, should make the Olympic trials must-see viewing just to see who makes the team. And they say that the U.S. Olympic trials is the most difficult competition in the world, including the Olympics.
Yeah. And the men's team is very, very good too. Will you will you be on site in Paris, or is this one that you do in Stanford?
I will be on site in Paris. I can't wait.
Ooh, that's a pretty nice job assignment there.
No complaints.
No complaints. Did one thing I want to ask about Simone Biles, has she ever, I mean, maybe you don't know this because I'm not, you know, I don't know how many sort of gymnastics events that you've done, but has she made any kind of inquiries from your knowledge that of maybe one day being on air with NBC? Because that logically, I mean, that would logically make a lot of sense. You saw Michael Phelps now has done swimming, you know, the greatest gymnast of all time, who's got a great personality, very, very comfortable on air. Have you heard that at all? And by the way, I don't even know this, but maybe she's done some broadcasting already in smaller form.
I don't know that she's made any inquiries our way, but I'm sure that we would love to have her if and when she's ready to retire.
All right, there you go. That's a very Molly Solomon-esque diplomatic answer by you, Lindsay.
Learn from the
all best. Right. And, yes, exactly. There you go. And then the so the last one I want to ask you about is the Friday prior to. Oh no, I take that back. I'm sorry. I have one question actually before this.
Sure.
When it comes to your job at the Derby, I should have asked you this before when we were talking about the Derby. How much prep do you individually have to do for each of the races? Like in your position as the executive producer, like, do you need to know who the top, I mean, you're going to do this for the Derby, obviously, but let's say, you know, whatever the second race is that you guys are doing on Saturday on NBC, like how detailed do you have to get in terms of like the horses that are in the race, or can you sort of just broadly overview it and you don't have to get dial as deep as obviously like your handicappers, et cetera?
Well, I definitely don't dial as deep as the handicappers because they are dialing very deep for reasons beyond television.
Yeah,
but, you know, listen, I'd like to say that I'm doing the deepest possible dive on every race. The reality is I definitely know the Derby more than any of the other undercard races, and I know every in and out of every storyline for the Derby. I'll go fairly deep on the undercard races, and, you know, I have cheat sheets in front of me to remind me of all the connections of each of the horses, but we have a great research team that puts together packets on every race with all the background on each of the horses. I absolutely read through those. We get a daily briefing, you know, on updates in and around racing, which include undercard fields as well. So I will do a relatively deep dive, but a deeper dive for the Derby for sure.
And then here's the last one I wanted to ask you. And this is, you have great insight into this because of what you're producing. Horse racing, and, you know, the Triple Crown coverage and Breeders' Cup coverage, the nexus between sports gambling and television has always existed. Nobody ever discusses or blinks or talks about when the odds are on the screen for the Derby. You know, you literally have handicappers coming on to talk about like what the odds are. You have, whether it's Kornacki or others, like literally giving advice on like how to bet like this race, because gambling obviously has been long part of horse racing. Has it given you any kind of insight into how this might work one day when it comes to the other sports? You know, if we take the NFL, for instance, like, you know, the NFL has its partnerships with sports gambling, but generally speaking, when it comes to game day and even the studio shows, all this stuff is pretty clean still. Like, you know, you're not getting odds on the bottom. Your broadcasters, by and large, aren't talking about over-unders or spreads or something like that. But you've literally produced, you know, a major, major production where gambling is a central part of the production, at least in my opinion. And I wonder if you've gleaned any insights into what, if this does go a little bit further than it's gone now, like what that might mean for the people who produce this stuff.
Yeah, listen, it's a good question. And I wouldn't say it's necessarily my area of expertise, certainly outside of racing. I think it's interesting, and it's an interesting comparison to make, but it's just so different. Like, as you said, it's just been so ingrained in horse racing forever, that, you know, you come at it from that perspective. It's part of the game. It holds up the game. I mean, it literally funds the game in a way that is not the case across other sports. You know, media rights deals are holding up the NFL in a very different way from, you know, how handle is wrapped up in all things horse racing. So I think it's different from that perspective. I think it would take a lot for the nature of those games to change and be so wrapped up in gambling to the point where it was as accepted kind of from a TV and coverage perspective. But all of that said, I think slowly but surely it is becoming, you know, more of the vernacular, more of what's accepted for audiences. And of course, as audiences play more, as they gamble more, they're expecting to see that content as part of what they're choosing to view leading up to the sports they want to watch. So I think it's inevitable in some sense of it, but it is very different. Horse racing is really wrapped up in it.
Lindsay Shanzer is NBC Sports' senior producer of horse racing, as well as their college football studio show. As we mentioned during this podcast, during the Olympics, she will be co-producing all the gymnastics coverage. So she is really in the middle of what's going to be just an incredible four-month stretch for her. Lindsay, I appreciate your time. I know this is a very, very busy week for you in Louisville. Have a great couple of days on air. And thanks so much for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast.
Glad to do it. Thanks for having me.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to Lindsay Shanzer for her time and insight. Head to the archives if you like these conversations. I actually had Lindsay's colleague not too long ago, Molly Solomon, who is the lead producer of all of NBC's Olympics coverage. You can check that conversation out. If you're into the NFL draft, we had Seth Markman and Charlie Youth, both Seth of ESPN, Charlie of the NFL Network, on how the draft gets produced. Did Ben Johnson get screwed at the 1988 Summer Olympics? Great new book by Mary Ormsby that examines that. Again, if you like these conversations, please leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That's how this podcast continues. I want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work. Thanks to everybody at Odyssey for their support. And thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.